This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, guys? Our Nation Hoops podcast. My name is Solomon Elite at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by special guest and guy I haven't talked to in about basketball in a long time, Ben Dubose. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Solomon. As good as any Rockets fan can be, I guess, after a little bit of a gut punch this weekend. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. And I'm assuming you're referring to Carmelo Anthony, and I have some thoughts on this. Obviously, if you guys aren't already caught up, Carmelo Anthony was traded to the Oklahoma City Thunder this weekend. And Twitter kind of exploded from all ends. The Oklahoma City Thunder angle and the Rockets angle in that they weren't able to complete this deal. That seemed like it seemed like a done deal for the most part throughout the...
It felt like an inevitability, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. Throughout the course of this summer, it just felt like it was going to happen. And I think that was a big reason for... I think that's a big reason that everybody was so angry. And the other reason is I just think that the fact that Carmelo went to a rival...
Yes.
...is what really sparked the anger, right? Because
It was Cleveland, it would have been a lot easier to take.
Yeah, or if he stayed anywhere in the East, for that matter. The fact that he went to a rival in the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think that sparked a lot of the animosity. And
there's still a little bit of lingering bitterness too over the Thunder getting Paul George at such a discounted rate, inexplicably, which I think was less about Sam Presti being a genius and more about the Pacers, for whatever reason, making a panic move. Maybe it's Victor Oladipo being an Indiana alum. I don't know what it is. I think that's more about the Pacers doing something dumb than it was anything about Sam Presti being a magician. But yeah, I think there's just a little bit of residual bitterness against Oklahoma City. Everything from the Paul George trade, Russell Westbrook winning the MVP. And so I think even though the Rockets beat Oklahoma City in the playoffs, there's still this animosity because for whatever reason, the Thunder have gotten a few things that I think Rockets fans think they don't really deserve. I think that's a fair characterization of it.
Yeah, I would certainly say that feels like where all the anger is coming from. But nevertheless, he's on the Thunder and nobody can really do anything about it. And I have some thoughts about this. Sam Presti did an awesome job this summer with limited resources. He should be really commended, and he's going to be a heavy front runner in that Executive of the Year race this year, along with Houston General Manager Daryl Morey. Second, like, I'm not upset about this, and there's a couple reasons for this. I think as many of the listeners know, and a lot of people who follow me on Twitter, I'm not that high on Carmelo Anthony. I just haven't been high on Carmelo Anthony in like some time now. It's been about like 4 years since I thought he was really an elite player that was worth going after. And you know, like, at this point in his career, what New York was asking for in that trade, I mean, if the reports are true, was just entirely too much for the Rockets to swallow. I don't think the Rockets could have come up with a better offer than what Oklahoma City had. And, like, I just don't think he's enough of a difference maker that you waste all your assets on him. Like, I think it's worth standing pat.
I agree. And he's not the difference makers where you go all in, because if you were to use some of the chips that they were said to want, such as Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon, you would have no further mobility in terms of future trades. You would obviously have no cap room with Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, James Harden making almost $80 million just between those, I think more than $80 million actually, between just those three players combined, you would be locked in to that as your core for at least the next 2 years. And for me, I don't think those guys, well, of course, I like Chris Paul and James Harden, but I don't think that core, I just don't think Carmelo Anthony is good enough to be worth that. And that's why I like talking to you, because I feel like you're a little bit more, you know, rational about it than a lot of fans. I think a lot of fans get starstruck by the name Carmelo Anthony and think he's the same guy he was when he was 28 or when he was 23 out of Syracuse. And my take, look, I think he could be a nice one-for-one upgrade over Ryan Anderson. I think he can do a lot of the same things. We talked before about his catch-and-shoot potential, how his numbers are fairly similar to Ryan, but obviously more scoring. So yeah, he could have helped you. He could have given you a similar spacing the floor dynamic from that four spot. But his inefficiencies, his defensive liabilities, his declining athleticism, all those things that are true of Carmelo now at 33, about to be 34, he's only a star in name. He's not a star in impact. So you have to be cautious in what you give for him. And the difference, show the irony, of course, with the it's tough to pile too much on the Knicks, because with the Knicks and the Rockets, there are only so many ways to make the math work. Now, I know according to the Woj story, they were looking for a wing scorer and all this other stuff, and a wing scorer,
a draft pick, yeah,
salary relief. Ultimately, they didn't get that. Ultimately, the funny thing in this is that the package they got for Oklahoma City was awfully similar in terms of what I'm sure was being offered from Houston. Just the difference is that Enes Kanter's deal expires in 2019, as opposed to Ryan Anderson's, which expires in 2020. And I understand that is a big deal for a team that's rebuilding like the Knicks. That extra year is a significant thing. And getting one less year on the contract, it does help New York. And from a Houston standpoint, unless you're willing to give Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon, which I'm certainly not, then there's not much else you could do, because you have to make the math work. And, you know, I laugh because some of the feedback, I know people are upset because it felt like an inevitability. I've seen some saying, well, if only you hadn't traded all those players for Chris Paul. Well, folks, how else were you going to get Chris Paul? If you were to sign him in free agency, you would have had to trade pretty much those same guys anyway to get under the cap to that amount, if not more, because I'm sure other teams in free agency would have been offering the max, which for Chris would have been like $35 million. So there was just – the bottom line is Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, even with Chris opting in, those guys make over $50 million combined. So to make it work from a Houston perspective, you have to send – $50 million plus out. That's just the way it works in the NBA, and there's no easy way to do that without sending out Ryan Anderson. And unfortunately, the Thunder just had a slightly better path because Enes Kanter's deal it expires 1 year earlier. So I don't see it as an indictment on Daryl. And as far as my, you know, reflections, I'm right there with you. You know, it's a little bit of a loss because, yes, I would take Carmelo over Ryan, but A, I don't think Ryan's a bad player at all, as I think you've done a great job illustrating on Twitter the last couple of days. Ryan was a big part of this team last year, and just because he was cold in the playoffs, I think a lot of people have overlooked just how valuable he was over the course of 82 games. And really, he could have been in the playoffs as well. It just so happened that he picked a bad time to go cold. I don't think it had that much to do with the playoffs per se. It's just everybody goes through certain stretches where their shot mechanically is not all the way there, and his happened to be in the playoffs. It's unfortunate, but over the balance of, you know, 100 games, however many the Rockets played preseason, regular season, playoffs, he was a helpful player to them. He's not Carmelo Anthony, but he's still pretty good. So, you know, it's a loss because I would have liked Carmelo, but it's not a devastating thing because it's like you would have gotten an incremental upgrade to your starting lineup, but he is not the missing piece. He is not the third star to where you get Carmelo and you say, wow, we're on the level of the Warriors. No, you have a puncher's chance now, but to get truly to that Warriors tier, you needed one more acquisition regardless of whether you had Carmelo Anthony or not. So that's why, you know, it's a little bit of a loss because I think he would have been a slight upgrade on Ryan. And, of course, it would have brought some energy to the fan base. And I'm sure that locker room, you know, I'm not oblivious to relationships he has with Chris Paul and James Harden. But big picture, I just don't see him as that star that a lot of Rockets fans do based on their name. He's a perfectly nice player, but I just don't see him as the difference maker. And so I think we're in complete agreement there.
Right. And I think a lot of the disagreement is because, like, Carmelo just doesn't have the same exposure that he used to have, and he's not on national TV anymore.
Yes.
So nobody really sees how good he actually is now. You know, he's lost a lot, like, in terms of athleticism, and his foot speed is just not the same as it was anymore. At this point, he's pretty much just a jump shooter who can attack closeouts, which I guess you can say it's a talent upgrade over Ryan Anderson, but, like, Ryan Anderson was, like, so instrumental in Houston's turnaround last year, and I said this on Twitter yesterday, and I'm concerned that Rockets fans are kind of just viewing him as a bad contract. I mean, this guy's a good player, man. Like, he can extend 3 feet beyond the 3-point line, which is something Carmelo can't do, and he provided a crazy amount of space for James Harden, and, you know, was a big reason that offense was so good last year. The Rockets were one of the 8 best offenses in NBA history last year, and a lot of that was because of Ryan Anderson, and he's probably the best power forward that's ever played with James Harden. And, you know, that might not be, like, a convincing statement, but, I mean, it's true. I mean, can you think of any, like, Demo, Terrence Jones, Josh Smith? He's better than all those guys. And you have somebody who's a good rotation player, and sure, he's overpaid, but in compared to all the other bad contracts in the NBA, he's useful and overpaid, right? There's other contracts in the NBA, like Joakim Noah. Like, Joakim Noah isn't providing much to an NBA rotation anymore, much less a team that's, you know, willing to contend for a championship. Ryan Anderson is. Like, he provides a lot to the Rockets. He's a starter.
And the other thing, I feel like he was a popular whipping boy because, you know, he didn't shoot his best in the playoffs, and then you combine it with him being the obvious guy rumored to go out in all these big moves this summer, you know, before the Rockets got Chris Paul. It was speculated that, well, they might have to go after Chris Paul in free agency, in which case they would shed Ryan. And so it's been easy to kind of rewrite history. And I'm not saying he's a good defender, but if you actually go back and watch those games, especially against Oklahoma City, they played him 30 plus minutes in a lot of those games. I'm not going to say he's a plus defender. I'm not going to lie and distort that, but he was not Enes Kanter, to use a perfect analogy in the trade. He was passable. He worked. He certainly doesn't have the foot speed, but I don't think he was a disaster in the playoffs. He was productive. And even though he didn't make his shots, still, that spacing was still a factor, and he helped. It's one of those things that just so happened that he went cold at an inopportune time, and I feel like a lot of Rockets fans, between that and then him being on the block, allegedly for Chris Paul and then certainly for Carmelo Anthony, have kind of just rewritten history to make him the fall guy for a lot of what happened in the playoffs. And what happened in the playoffs, you know, yeah, it's unfortunate that he missed a few shots, but let's not act as if he was this enormous negative and this huge problem for this team that they just couldn't overcome. I watched those games, and I've rewatched them this summer against the Thunder and Spurs. It wasn't like that. I wish he had hit more shots, but let's not act like that this guy just did not belong on a basketball court. I think that's a stretch, and I agree. I think he's going to be a good player this year. He was a good player last year. He's a good power forward, as there's been in Houston. He's got a good attitude, and so I hope Houston fans, you know, I understand he's overpaid, but I think there's just this tendency, because so much these days, everyone loves to play fantasy GM. We all know how much traffic spikes during the summer. Everyone loves to do all this stuff on Twitter, the trade machines, stuff like that. And I get that no one was willing to absorb Ryan into cap space to make a deal like a Carmelo feasible. But that doesn't mean he's a bad basketball player. I have been told multiple times, Solomon, by people with the Rockets, that they had third-team proposals, not just Portland, others as well. Teams were interested in Ryan Anderson. It's just they would also have to shed salaries of their own to make it work, and that's not what the Knicks, a rebuilding team, wanted to do. So ultimately went with the Oklahoma City deal, Enes Kanter a year shorter, and that's certainly their prerogative. But the Rockets see Ryan Anderson as a valuable basketball player, and so did others around the league. And it kind of bothers me, just the perception of these trade talks. No, it's not that teams around the league see Ryan as terrible and that no one wanted him. It's that the contract is overpaid, and so no one's going to take him just into cap space for nothing. But as a basketball player, sure, he's absolutely useful, and he was a big part of how the Rockets won 55 games. And that's why I kind of laugh at some of the characterizations I've seen of, oh, if only they hadn't signed Ryan Anderson last summer. No, Ryan Anderson signing him was a big part of why they won 55 games, which was a huge part of extending James Harden twice, convincing him on this organization, and then ultimately convincing Chris Paul to sign with the Rockets over both the Clippers and the Spurs. So Ryan Anderson, I'm not going to say he's overpaid. I'm not going to say he's a bad basketball player. And I'm also not going to say hasn't been a positive for Houston, because he certainly was last year. He was a big part of their success, and he can be this year as well.
Right. There's a reason the Rockets have targeted Ryan Anderson for many years. And there's a reason they weren't able to just give him up. And, like, I just think, like, the best characterization I saw Ryan Anderson yesterday was one of my followers tweeted at me, Ryan Anderson's much more valuable to the Rockets than he is to any other team in the NBA. Because he fills a role for the Rockets that he's not going to fill for a rebuilding team like the Knicks. Like, he's just not. Like, that's why he's not an asset to the Knicks, and that's why it was so difficult to trade him to the Knicks. But if you're talking like, if you're talking about Ryan Anderson on like the Trailblazers, like I think he makes them better. If you put him, yes. if you put him on the Thunder, like I think he makes them better. Like he makes a lot of teams better. And I just think that, you know, a lot of this is distorted because of his contract. But yeah, we talked too much about this trade. I think the Rockets are fine. I think the Rockets are in a good position moving forward. Daryl had an excellent summer, and like one of the better summers I've ever seen him have. Him and Garrison Rosas, the assistant general manager, who doesn't get enough credit in this operation.
Right.
Yeah, and they had an awesome summer, and I don't think Rockets fans should be upset. They're still in a pretty good position. They're still probably going to be a top four seed in the West this year. And
yeah, and one final note that I'll throw out on this. Yeah, they had a great summer, and you know, for folks what-ifing about the exact order, oh, if they hadn't traded for Chris Paul, would that have made it easier to go after Carmelo somehow? Which, as I said earlier, I don't think it would have. Well, folks, also, because of that creative trade, doing it before the July 1st start of free agency, then that's also exactly how, as an over-the-cap team, you were able to get P.J. Tucker, Tariq Black.
You kept your exceptions.
Use an exception for Nene. So, yeah, it's not as simple as saying, well, if only you had staggered Chris Paul. No, that's how they were able to do other things besides Chris Paul and make this team as deep as it is right now.
And that's how they were able to keep their draft picks and not have to give up Ryan Anderson and dump that contract. It was a really creative trade, beneficial for both sides. But, yeah, I'm totally fine with how things worked out here. Like, I'm someone who wasn't as high on Carmelo Anthony as a lot of the fan base was, so I understand if I feel differently from how a lot of people feel. But I mean, trust me, he's not as good as you think he is. He's a good basketball player, and I'm not trying to degrade him, but I promise you, when you watch him on national TV this year, he's not the Carmelo Anthony you see in your head every day. He's just not. Like, I watch the Knicks a lot. I know, like, he's not the same guy. Yeah, I you can take my word for it, or just watch this year when he gets a bigger platform. I'm not saying he's not going to be useful with Thunder, because I certainly think he will be, but I just think the Rockets are fine. The Rockets are fine, and they didn't blow this. So let's go ahead and get to why I brought you on originally, Media Day. I am so excited for this Rockets season and the NBA season in general. I have my league pass loaded up. So many teams made moves this offseason, and the Rockets are atop that list, and this roster is looking really, really good going forward. How excited are you for the season to begin?
Very. It's easy to kind of, it's a weird vibe, because certainly a lot of folks had built up this Carmelo notion in their head, but I would say this Rockets team has a legitimate shot to win 60, which would be historic for this franchise. I would say, really, if they're healthy, I expect them to be very close, if not 60, certainly in the 58 range, maybe one of the better teams in franchise history. And so I know people what if about Carmelo, and certainly the presence of the Warriors, historically great, is a factor. But this is as good of a team entering training camp as I have ever seen as a Rockets fan. And I say that as someone who was born in 1984. So I've been around for a lot of this franchise, and this is as good as it gets. This is an incredible team with two players in the top 10. And it's almost unprecedented to have two point guards this smart, this savvy together. I'm really excited to see that what could happen. And of course, we've seen all offseason, the togetherness, the workouts, and you factor in, you know, basically two point guards. And you have lights out 3-point shooters like Eric Gordon, like Ryan Anderson. Of course, you have the defense, guys such as Trevor Reed, PJ Tucker. You feel like this is the year 4, where Clint Capella, he's playing for an extension. So certainly he's going to have every motivation to try and get 30 minutes per game and to be a true upper tier starting center in the NBA. There's not anything you can point to this team and say this is a weakness. You feel really good about this team. The only weakness you can nitpick is, are they quite as good as the Warriors, who are probably the most talented team in the history of the league? And so I know there's, you know, just a tendency, because of the name Carmelo Anthony and it feeling inevitable, and then somehow it not being to be disappointed. But folks, going into the season, I don't know if I've ever seen a roster quite this talented. This is a really the potential to be, at least, a really special group.
Yeah, I think, and I put a poll on Twitter, and a lot of people agreed with me. I think this is the deepest and most talented in terms of top line talent Rockets team since 2009. Since that Yao and T-Mac team where they were like
with Artest,
nine. They were like nine deep. That Luis Scola, Ron Artest, Aaron Brooks, Vaughn Wafer. That was a deep, deep team. I think they're as good. I think this roster is just as good, if not better, than that roster. And this is a unique position for this franchise because they haven't been this close in a while. I'm excited. I'm sure you're excited. So explain to the listeners what exactly is Media and what does it entail, Media Day?
Yeah, so Media Day, it's a fun day in which basically they make, of course, Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, essentially the heads of the franchise, but also pretty much any star player. They haven't officially released the list, but certainly James and Chris, and I would also expect the veterans, Trevor, Nene, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, hopefully Ryan. I know Ryan was in town last week, so hopefully he'll be available as well, because I know a lot of folks want to hear from him. But basically, the vast majority of the players, in addition to the GM and the coach, and it's a great day because you actually, of course, they're available to us as media, but what's different about it than, say, just a typical press conference, because certainly, you know, Tuesday will be the start of training camp, and I'll be there as well, and I'll, you know, it'll be fun to see and talk to them about. But when you get into the season, Solomon, everything becomes a day-to-day grind, in which, yeah, you can ask bigger picture questions, but it's essentially going to be the players, the coaches, 90% of the time, they're kind of going to redirect the question into basically whatever they have to do to get through the next day or two. And I understand that. The NBA season, 82 games, you know, it takes 7 months to get to the playoffs. I understand you have to have a day-by-day focus just to get through. But what Media Day is cool is you actually get, you know, it's just understood the questions that are about the season as a whole. They're also about looking back to what's happened over the summer. But you actually get to ask some bigger picture things. And so, you know, if you're kind of an intense Rockets fan, which I feel like most people listening to, you know, either your podcast at Red Nation Hoops or me at Locked On Rockets, you know, if you're a more diehard fan like that, Media Day is for you, because that's when you could ask the executives, the coaches, the players about big picture evaluations, where they are as players, where they think the team is, what they think the goals are. And so that's what's just so unique about it, is that the depth of the responses you get, you'll see them on Twitter all day tomorrow. You know, I'll do my best to retweet them all and tweet some myself. I'm sure you will as well. But you just get a deeper, you just get more depth to the answers that it's really hard to get over the season. Because once the NBA season starts, you know, it's kind of the same thing as following baseball. For those of you that follow the Astros this summer, you know, yes, there's a place for journalists, but it generally turns into a day-by-day sport. Whereas Media Day is the one time you can ask them really deeper questions, like, where is this franchise at? How did this come together this summer? And where do you think you're going potentially this season?
Right. The best way I can describe it is it's like a mixture of picture day and the first day of school, right? Like, everybody's
that too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Everybody's excited. It's 0-0. Everybody thinks they have a chance at a championship. It's a clean slate for everybody. The bad taste out of everybody's mouth, except for the Warriors that got eliminated in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah.
It's gone. Like, and like, it's basically a new day, right? And like, everybody is excited. Everybody wants the season to begin. Everybody's more open, as you said, like, to talk about anything. Everything's on the table to discuss. And everybody's in a good mood, and that's pretty much why Media Day is so fun, because you get some of the best quotes from Daryl Morey, from Mike D'Antoni, from the players like James Harden.
Sure.
Like, you get some of those best quotes. They come out at this time, and it sparks a lot of debate on Twitter. It sparks a lot of debate on social media. It's just a really fun day for the fans, and that's what it's all about. It's all about the fans, pretty much. You get to view your favorite players, executives, coaches, you know, give their interviews, answer questions, and it's just a good day for the fans. It's a good day for diehards, like, if people listen to this podcast.
Yeah, and you also feel like you get more of a personal connection too for that reason, because obviously they're talking about the summer, they're talking about their goals, but some of it's just, you know, it can be fun things. It can be like what you've been doing this summer. In the case of Ryan Anderson, sure, there will be some awkward questions about what he thought. You can also talk, you know, about, you know, Ryan getting married this summer, which thankfully, you know, it was the best timing ever, by the way, for Ryan to get married this summer, because at least you know, it's not that he's active on social media, but at least he's had a distraction other than just following the rumors to the same extent that that we have. You know, it's not like he's just been sitting at home on his couch doing nothing. I'm sure he's had a lot going on in his personal life with that. But that's the kind of thing, you know, you can talk to people on a personal level. And so that's what's fun, not just for media, but fans as well, because, you know, you just get a deeper and better answer than you do once you get into the grind of an 82-game season, training camp, and everything that goes with that.
Yeah, and I totally agree. So what are you most looking forward to in terms of Media Day?
I'm not going to lie. I know this is going to sound like, you know, I'm wanting to stir drama, but I want to hear from Ryan Anderson and just make sure that he's okay. I'm pretty sure he will be. All of my experiences with Ryan this past year, he's been incredibly professional. He's not a guy with a huge ego. He gets it. Obviously, he's financially secure no matter where he goes. You know, he's got $80 million guaranteed, well, now $60 million guaranteed over the next 3 years. But certainly, I'm sure he's noticed the fact that most around the team this summer expected him to be gone. He was not a part of the group that went to Vegas and worked out together, although he was getting married then, so maybe that was a factor. But even like the Chris Paul press conference, which was a big deal and kind of had a similar vibe, and I know the fans enjoyed that. Not a single person, not even Daryl Morey, mentioned Ryan Anderson by name. In the highlight package that was on the big screen, you know, they kind of meshed together Rockets highlights from last year with Chris Paul photoshopped in a Rockets jersey throwing assists, and Ryan was the only rotation player not there. So it's, you know, I understand he's a great guy. I mean, he's as good of a guy as I've come across in the NBA, but it's awkward that literally everyone with the organization basically assumed for 2+ months now that he would not be with the team, and yet he is. And I know they've taken some steps. You know, we learned from Gerald Morey's interview with Jonathan Fagan in the Chronicle last week. I thought Jonathan did a great job with that Q&A, by the way, on the Chronicle website. Right. But, yeah, we learned that he did sit down with Ryan last week and basically explain his frustrations. And, you know, a big part of it, I'm sure, was how ridiculous the Knicks have been through this saga. And perhaps one thing the Rockets have in their corner, you know, if there is something that seems a little sticky, you can just point to, hey, these guys are the Knicks, and they do have a history of doing some fairly ridiculous things from time to time that are not normal courses of action.
Right.
But you just want to see that Ryan's okay, that he gets it. Like I said, I've never seen like a huge ego out of him. I think on some level, if you ask him in private, Ryan's the kind of guy, you say, hey, who's the better player, you or Carmelo Anthony? He would probably say Carmelo. That's how low-key he is. That's how unassuming. So I think he'll probably get it. I think he also realizes that both Chris Paul and James Harden have close relationships with Carmelo Anthony. And so I think he knows that none of this was personal. It just so happened that he had to be the guy that would move out, both for salary reasons and because of the position Carmelo plays. But at the same time, it will be nice to hear from him and hopefully learn that, you know, that everything's okay, that he's able to put this behind him and go back to basically being the same guy he was last year in terms of not just a basketball player, but a teammate in that locker room as well.
Yeah, and I think Ryan will be fine. I mean, few players in the NBA today have been in as many trade rumors as Ryan Anderson. I mean, maybe Ricky Rubio, but I mean,
That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
When he was in New Orleans, he was on the block almost every deadline, it felt like. So he's been through this.
Right, and he's a professional. I think he'll be fine. He knows it's not personal, it's just business. And I think the Rockets are just precautious in that they kept they kept his name out of stuff, and they, you know, they didn't put anything in highlights. Like, I'm not sure if they 100% expected to trade him, but they just wanted to be safe, right? You didn't want that possibility of him being traded and having him in the highlight package. So yeah, that's going to be interesting. What I'm most looking forward to from Media Day is how they talk about the Warriors, because been so fascinated by the way this organization, specifically Daryl Morey, have talked about the Warriors up until last season. Like, they were talking about him after the trade deadline. Every move the Rockets have made felt like it was an intended, like, upgrade to go at the Warriors. Like, it just feels like every move they make, they have the Warriors in the back of their mind. Like, adding as many wings as they did this summer, PJ Tucker, Luke Mbamute, I think that's a direct response to challenging the Warriors. And, like, you know, and adding Chris Paul, again, you need star talent to go at this top level team, and I just find it fascinating how open they've been about this, because I've never seen Daryl be this open about a competitor of his. Like, he rarely mentions team names, he rarely mentions player names, he's really safe about not getting fined, but in reference to the Warriors, he's an open book. Like if you ask him the right question, he'll answer. And I'm interested to see how that goes into media day, how the players talk about it, how Daryl talks about it if he's asked about it again. Because yeah, this organization is clearly every move they make, this roster in general is designed to go at the Warriors. Like the way they're designed from top to bottom is to combat what the Warriors are best at. You know, they have all this great wing depth, they have all this great front court defense, and they have all this switchability on defense and shooting shooters all over the floor. And I just find it fascinating how they're constructing this roster, how they're openly talking about the Warriors, and I want to see if that carries into media day.
I'll throw in one more thing, and it's somewhat tied in, I think, also to the pursuit of the Warriors. I want to see how much ownership Chris Paul takes into this season and this team already, even as a guy who, in theory, should be the new kid in school. But ultimately, that's not what we've seen from Chris. One of the things that kind of bothers me on Rocket Twitter, it's so annoying, is this idea, this fascination of, oh, what if Chris leaves after 1 year because they didn't get Carmelo? And yes, I understand stuff can happen. He's only under contract for one season because he opted in, which, of course, the Rockets honestly did from a team-building perspective. But my contention all along, and you can see it in a lot of his commentary, he picked the Rockets not just because it's a short-term championship shot, but because he really likes the organization. And one of the stories I thought I'm sure you really enjoyed as much as I did, was that piece last week from Chris Haynes of ESPN about the Andre Iguodala pursuit, which the Rockets became very close to. And one of the things that was interesting about the Iguodala pursuit, you know, I talked about the Rockets being in the meeting with Iguodala, I believe, out in L.A., and Harden called Morey during the meeting, and Morey answered it, because, of course, you always answer the phone when James Harden calls, you know.
Right.
But James did not even realize at that time that they were meeting with Iguodala. Now, I'm sure James was in the loop enough to know that they at least had some plans, but it was interesting that, you know, and I'm not going to call out James for that, because I don't think most players in the NBA are that heavily involved to where they would be in the meeting for, you know, you'd be in the meeting if it's like, you know, Dwight Howard in 2013, that sort of, you know, top free agent on the market, maybe. By and large, NBA players, you know, they'll text, they'll call, but when it comes to these meetings, they'll let the coaches, the GMs, the, you know, the basketball people run the show. Whereas what's interesting about that Chris Haynes story, you learned that basically Chris Paul came in the room and dominated the presentation, and he was the pitch guy. And the interesting thing about that, and of course, we all know Chris and James, they're friends, they like each other, but they have very different personalities. James, as a leader, tends to be more hands-off. He tends to lead by example. Chris is very hands-on. And so one of the things he liked, he raved about the transparency of the Rockets organization, the leadership, all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to on-court stuff, I kind of have the feeling that, you know, it's not just about this year for Chris. He's trying to build them long term in his image. And so I think he's going to be, you know, more of the prototypical quarterback, whereas you think of more typical NBA leaders as opposed to James. And so I know it's a little different since it's technically his first day of school, but they've been working out together over the summer. And so when it comes to fielding the tough questions, pursuing the Warriors, everything they want to do as a franchise this season, I want to see how firm Chris Paul is in his discussions, because I just have a feeling that even though he's the new kid, Chris Paul views this as his team. And from a hands-on perspective, I think he's going to be as hands-on as it gets in terms of trying to build this team and talk about what their expectations are and doing a lot of the stuff that you would call, I guess, a coach on the floor, so to speak.
Right, and I think a lot of people forget that Chris Paul turned down money to come here. Like, he waived his trade kicker.
Big time.
He waived his trade kicker money just to come to Houston. I mean, this guy is clearly invested in the organization. And
opting in, you know, he's got $25 million last year of his existing contract, which was under the old cap. If he had become a free agent, his base salary would have been $35 or $40 million. So, yeah, right. He gave up a lot of money. I mean, he sees this as his place, not just for this year, but this is where he wants to go, not just from a James Harden perspective. Certainly he likes that. But trust me, Chris, as the, you know, the NBA Players Union head, he's as influential as any player in the league. He knows organizations inside out. So for him to choose Houston, you know, yeah, he believes they have a shot this year, and that's nice. But also long term, trust me when I say that he sees it as a place that he feels like he really fits from a hierarchy, leadership, that sort of standpoint. And so even though it'll be day one and technically he's new, I just have a funny feeling that you're going to see some quotes from Chris tomorrow about the Warriors and everything else. you're going to feel like, even though James Harden's probably still the best player, you're almost going to feel like it's kind of Chris Paul's team, just because that's kind of the hands-on leader that he is. And I think that might catch a few Rockets fans off guard, just because we're not necessarily used to having that kind of player in Houston, because while Houston's had stars, both James Harden and Dwight Howard are a little more hands-off. Neither one of those is the stereotypical, you know, coach in the huddle type, which Chris Paul certainly is. So I think seeing him and kind of having the contrast between Chris and his teammates, I think that's going to be something interesting to watch tomorrow as well.
Right. Harden and Dwight were kind of aloof. They didn't really speak much. They weren't that vocal. And Chris Paul is the complete opposite. You can you always hear stories about season ticket holders able to hear what Chris Paul is saying on the floor in Los Angeles. Like that's how loud he is on the floor. He's more of an extrovert, whereas James Harden is an introvert. So I get what you're saying from that perspective. And it's weird with Chris Paul, because it feels like he's already a Houston Rocket and he hasn't even played a game yet, because this trade happened so early in the offseason. And you kind of forget that it happened before free agency even started. Like, and he was like the first star to change teams. And I think that's kind of why the luster from the Chris Paul acquisition's kind of worn off, because it happened so long ago. And everybody's kind of focused on the right now.
Yep.
That's a major acquisition, man.
Yeah, and I think also, it's major. And, you know, both the ESPN and SINBA ranks had him at 7th in the league, which I think is completely fair.
Right.
And I just feel like it's the perfect storm, because a lot of folks on NBA Twitter, it's a combination of exposure in big games, and there's also kind of a shiny new toy syndrome that goes with all these evaluations. The thing about Chris Paul, he's older. Not people point out that he's 32, but the flip side, what not enough people point out, he has shown no signs of slippage at all. If you look at his advanced stats, you can barely tell any difference from when he was 28. And so part of it's, you know, he understands his body. He's such a cerebral player that he understands maintenance, and he's the kind of guy, I would almost compare him, although he's not a defensive liability to the same extent, as Dirk Nowitzki. Now, I'm not comparing him defensively. Chris Paul's first team defense, and even Dirk at his best, was not a good defensive player. But what I mean in terms of the comparison is that Dirk was able to last long in his career because his game was not fully built around athleticism. He was a guy, Dirk was still elite, even going to 36, 37, because of how well he understood his body, how cerebral he was. And even though Chris is a little more defensive-oriented than Dirk was, I think there's still that same dynamic of their prime being able to last longer. Nonetheless, NBA fans on Twitter, they just see his age, 32, and you know, people start to wonder, oh, maybe he's past his prime. And then the other thing is that, well, you know, you have veterans, if they're not past their prime, they get to prove it in the playoffs. Well, the last 2 years, the Clippers have just had no shot, because 2 years ago, both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin got hurt. This past year, it was Griffin, but basically, the Clippers the last 2 years have had catastrophic playoff injuries at the worst time, the kind that you just can't expect any team to reasonably recover from. The year before that, of course, they would have been in the conference finals, except Josh Smith and Corey Brewer went absolutely insane. And so because of that, you know, I know it can get overstated, but genuinely, the Clippers did have some bad luck the last 3 years in terms of not getting as many postseason games as they deserved. And I'm not saying that they would have been a championship team, Solomon. What I'm saying is that if the Clippers had a little better luck, at least you would have seen them have a higher volume of playoff games, even if they didn't win those series, to where the casual NBA fan would see Chris Paul enough on the big stage and realize just how good of a player that is. As it turned out, he hasn't been on the big stage. You see that he's 32, and there's just this tendency to think that, well, you know, maybe these younger guys, you know, it floored me earlier this summer to see how many people actually thought that Kyrie Irving was as good or even better than Chris Paul. And of course, they're not even close. Chris Paul is a substantially better player. But Kyrie Irving has just been on that stage the last couple of NBA finals. And so that just tends to kind of drive the thinking, especially for fans that don't follow closely. So I think it's sort of the perfect storm for why Chris Paul has been overlooked a little bit. And in addition to the acquisition happening early, I think that's why not everyone fully realizes just how influential it is. But yeah, I'm with you. I think it's absolutely that big. I agree with the rankings and say he's a top 7 player in the NBA. And it's massive. It's as big of a free agent acquisition as the Rockets franchise has ever had.
Right. Chris Paul is really, really good. We're talking about a guy who's continually in the MVP conversation year after year after year. In fact, even at the beginning of last season, like, he had an awesome first stretch before he got hurt. Like, a lot of people, including myself, thought he was the front runner for MVP in the beginning, before he got that first injury. And he has those awesome stretches where he can just take over a game by himself. And you know, the playoff stuff, yeah, it's hurt him in terms of reputation, but I mean, it's not like he hasn't performed in the playoff,
right.
Playoff level. Like, there's a reason we call him a point god. Like, this guy shows up in the biggest moments. He's an insanely clutch player, and over the years, yes, he's getting older, but I mean, in some aspects of his game, he's getting better. Like, last year was his best 3-point shooting year of his career. His assist to turnover ratio, which I find surprising, it's going down year after year after year. That keeps dropping, like, to where it's almost non-existent how little he turns the ball over. Like, this guy's a fantastic ball handler, one of the best ball handlers in the NBA. His game is just not as flashy. It's very cerebral, and that's why he's just not as exposed and not as exciting. But yeah, this guy's an awesome, awesome player. Major acquisition. Last question before we get out of here, Ben. Who are you most looking forward to interviewing at Media Day?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not gonna say Chris Paul or Ryan Anderson, even though it might be Ryan for the reasons we've already discussed. I'm trying to think of who. This is gonna be a little off. This is gonna be a little off the wall, but I'm gonna say Nene, only because I want to. You know, Nene is kind of the elder statesman, but he's one of those hands-on leaders. You know, I want to see what he thinks, even though he's only, you know, during the season at least, an 18 minutes per game backup off the bench. He is very influential in the hierarchy of that locker room. You know, a lot of guys love him, and so I want to hear what he thinks about the offseason. I would also love selfishly to figure out what the hell happened in the first few days of July, because we all remember the drama of when they had the deal, then they didn't, because of the whole, you know, the Rockets misunderstood what the age 38 rule,
right.
How it was characterized. You know, does it start July 1st or does it start October 1st? Which is a, you know, it's an easy thing to misunderstand, but it was just a very awkward situation. So I kind of want to hear from him. And I'm going to answer, it's going to be 1A, 1B. I want to hear from an A because he's a very interesting, fascinating guy, a great interview, very forward. He's a leader, very respected. I also want to see Clint Capella. So I want to interview Nene, but I want to see Clint, because the other thing about Clint every year, you can tell. One of the reasons that I like Clint, and certainly the Rockets love him, there is nobody that works harder than that guy. And it feels like every year his body turns out more chiseled and, you know, more ready, it feels like, to handle the rigors of, you know, a lot of folks say, well, why can't he just play 35 minutes per game? Well, he could. The question is maintaining peak efficiency, what it takes being an NBA player, you know, a big man that's basically 7 feet tall, running up and down the court in a high-paced offense for 35 minutes a night. That's tough. Could he do it? Sure, he could. The question for the Rockets, why they've kept him, you know, slowly bumping him from 20 minutes then to 25, then the 30 is okay. How do we maintain him at his maximum efficiency? And, you know, every year you can just see his body develop each and every year. And this is year 4. It's also a contract year for him. So, yeah, Clint's a nice guy. I want to interview him. But also just want to see him, because I just have a feeling that Clint is going to wow people with his physique, because you compare it. I mean, just his normal work ethic is tremendous. And then you combine it that, hey, this is a year where he's undoubtedly the starter at center. It's not like last year where, you know, it was that 24-24 split going into the year. Also, everyone knows it's a contract year. So, yeah, I'm excited to interview Nene, but I'm also excited to see Clint Capella, because I just have a feeling that he's going to look in pretty awesome shape once we see him at Toyota Center tomorrow.
Yeah, those are interesting answers. I'm super high on Clint Capella. Everybody knows this. I'm really excited about his potential defensively if he's become a better rim protector over the summer. And yeah, Muscle Watch 2017 is in full effect.
Yes.
And that's gonna be a big story going into next summer. And you know, the thing I found really fascinating about Clint Capella is how much Chris Paul raved about him during his introductory press conference, because you don't really see that from a major acquisition from like Chris Paul. You don't really see him talk about a young player like Clint Capella, but everybody in the organization is super high on him. People outside the organization realize how much potential he has defensively. This guy has, I'm not kidding, I'm not exaggerating, he has all defensive potential in terms of how good he can be on it at that end of the floor. He just has that kind of mobility and length defensively.
And he just has the right attitude, too. He's obviously that athletic. He's a good defensive player. I agree. He's got even more room to grow there. But the best part of all, he just has the right attitude, and that he is incredibly coachable. This is going to sound like I'm taking a shot at Dwight Howard, but I'm really not. With Dwight, everyone knew he could be a good pick-and-roll player. He didn't fully embrace it, and a lot of big men don't, because it's easier just to get the ball on the low block. There's less energy expended, and a lot of big men, you know, they hate being active in the pick-and-roll, and then if they don't get the ball or it doesn't work out, they feel like it was just a waste of their energy. And I know that's going to sound like I'm taking a shot at Dwight, but the reality, a lot of big men are that way in the NBA. That's just the culture. That's just the way it goes. But Clint is the type of guy, he will do whatever his coaches tell him. He will run that pick and roll until his legs fall off. He is he's just wired differently. And so now that's why James Harden loved him. And now you have basically two elite point guards in, on that pick and roll, and Chris Paul and James Harden, and you have a center that is willing to run it essentially relentlessly. Yeah, I mean, he is a best friend, I think, on the basketball court for both Chris and James, and it's easy to understand why I couldn't be higher on him. I'm the same way that you are on Clint. I think it's going to be a huge, huge year for him.
Right. Contract season, it's going to be big. My answers are kind of boring. I feel like you can say this answer every single year, and it'll be correct. My who I'm most looking forward to like hearing from the press conference is Daryl Morey. Like, just every year, he has this money quote, whether it's last year saying, I want to be a top four team in the West, was kind of threw everybody aback. Because I remember even people in the local media didn't expect that much from the Rockets. Like, people thought the Rockets would win maybe 40, 45 games. And for him to come out and say, we want to have home court.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a big quote, right? And it set the standard for where the Rockets wanted to be. And I want to see what he says this year. And again, in reference to the Warriors, I want to see what he says, what he's going to say about that. I want to see, like, I don't think Daryl's done dealing. Like, and that might be a little hot take-ish, but I just feel like he has one more thing up his sleeve. I just think it may not happen right now. It probably won't happen right now. Maybe it'll happen at the trade. I just think he has.
Yeah.
He's hiding something.
And that's what I mean.
Go ahead.
No, I've made the point that in the Carmelo chase, it's not that the Rockets didn't have assets; it's that Carmelo was not worth those assets. But either way, as we said earlier, you probably need one more move to truly get, as good as they are now, to truly get to a Warriors talent level. And the Rockets are not assetless. They've got pieces. It's just it wasn't really worth it to go all in with Carmelo being that guy, because I think we're both in agreement he's not anymore. But yeah, Morey's got, I wouldn't say they have just loaded assets, but they've got better assets than most people think. It's just a matter of the player being worth it. I don't think Carmelo was, but ultimately there could be guys closer to the deadline that are. So I'm in agreement with you on Daryl. One more thing I want to sneak in real quick, and I don't know if you had more to add on Daryl, you certainly can. I should have also mentioned I want to hear from James Harden. I know that's the obvious answer. I thought you were going to say that at first when you were saying it was obvious. But the one thing from James will be interesting to hear. I trust him. He's been tremendous here. But there is a theme to James in which he's put up his best seasons. James has been fabulous in Houston no matter what. But he's put up his best seasons when he's doubted. 2 years ago, the first time when he won the Players MVP, last year, we all know how great he was. They were each coming off, one was coming off the first year that felt like they underachieved with Dwight Howard. And, of course, last year was coming off of 41-41 when they certainly underachieved by any metric. And so James seems to fuel off of doubt. If there's one nitpick you could point at James, it's how does he handle success? How does he handle, when the press is good, as it was fairly good this summer. But my sense is that, A, he's matured a little bit personally, and B, if he needed a little bit of a kick to drive him, certainly the way the Spurs series ended and some of the hits he took in the national media after Game 6, I have a sense that even though the Rockets had a very successful summer, you're still going to see the same type of driven James Harden that you did 1 year ago. I know that's kind of an obvious answer, but I should have thrown that in earlier, and so I wanted to kind of cut you off and apologies for that, but throw that in as well.
No, you're good. Harden looks jacked.
I've noticed that too.
Yeah, he put that picture up on Instagram, but you can even see it when he's wearing like these jerseys for like media day and stuff. Like, you can see the kind of he's developed his body over the summer, and this maturation process with Harden really started last summer. Like, he took a totally different ownership over the franchise last summer. I felt like and it extended into last season, into that incredible MVP year, and it's carried through this summer. Like, it didn't look like he put his foot on the brake. Like, it looked like he worked his ass off in the summer.
Yeah, and it was not like the 2015 summer when he went on sort of the Kardashian tour, which of course I thought was overplayed, but there's certainly some truth in it. That was when he was with Chloe. That was when he and Ty Lawson were together all the time. Just this summer did not have that sort of vibe at all from James Harden off the court.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to retire Harden Fat Watch. I think it's over.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
Yeah, I think Harden's kind of figured it out. Like, you have to be a top level athlete in the NBA. You have to stay in shape. You have to work your ass off in the summer in order to just compete with the top of the West. That's what these professional athletes do. And I think Harden's learned that lesson. I think he's taken that to heart. I think these criticisms are actually going to be good for Harden. The fact that the Rockets lately, with this Carmelo Anthony trade and other stuff, they're starting to be overlooked in terms of a top level team in the West. And I'm fascinated to see how this team responds.
They do their best when they're overlooked.
Right. Yeah, they absolutely do. If you remember the 2014-15 season, they were absolutely overlooked. Last season, yep, they were overlooked. And I believe this season they're kind of overlooked, but I mean, not in the ways that they were last year, but still enough to where you can have that kind of inner motivation. Yeah, so this season's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to media tomorrow. I'm looking forward to having you on the podcast later in the season because we have a lot to talk about in terms of this Rockets.
Absolutely. Season. This is going to be a great year, buddy.
Yeah, and that's Ben DuBose. Do you have anything to plug before you head out?
Not beyond the obvious. For those who aren't already listening to Locked On Rockets, please do, now that media day and training camp starts this week, I'm going to go back to having a daily podcast, usually 15 to 30 minutes of just Rockets talk each day. We'll see what we learn. But yeah, Locked On Rockets, you can subscribe to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all the platforms, pretty much the same places, I'm sure, where we can find your show as well. And as far as podcasts go, it's always the more the merrier. The more basketball conversation there is, the better. So if you're not already listening to my show, please do so. And of course, if you're not already listening to Solomon's show, I strongly urge you to listen to folks to listen to your stuff as well.
Right, guys, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good rating if you like the show. If you didn't like the show, give us a good rating anyways. And yeah, guys,
yeah,
good night.